Hey, Alex, thank you for coming in today. You have a really deep background in data science and AI. You've done a lot, for example, with IBM, and you've done things with the University of Southern California and Irvine and Ingram Micro and so on, including quite a diverse background, for example, from Stanford as a sociology. So, very, very interdisciplinary. So thank you for coming in today to share insights with our audience.
Sure, very welcome. And as you mentioned, I start from sociology and statistics. So I have been and working with data for a long time, many years. And I kind of love to apply data science to solve all kinds of problems. So I'm not limiting myself to one industry or one area. And so it's kind of cross industry, although very, very interdisciplinary, like you mentioned. Love to have this opportunity to chat.
So, Alex, my audience are actually the number one typically followers of the interviews. They're founders and CEOs are usually number one, and CXOs are up there, board members, and then also professors, students, and experts. So, but it's always typically executives are the number one followers of the stuff I do. So. But they're always curious. You've got this great career, the CEO of RMDS Labs, and you've got this data science background, work with Harvard University, Data Science Review, et cetera, it just goes on and on. Really, really deep background. So what were the inflection points in your life that created this wonderful career? And it could have been something when you were very young, let's say when you were like 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, or something in middle school or high school or university or within your jobs. There's always, I always find maybe 2 or 3 inflection points that sort of got you into where you are today.
Yes, thank you for this great question. I have been like always interested in mathematics and especially applied math. And so I'm not like a pure mathematician like some of my friends. And I kind of at when I was in the Stanford University, I kind of chosen to be in sociology. And I thought like mathematics is very cool, and it has been applied to solve a lot of physical problems. But however, in the social science field, like in terms of studying people, like predicting, see like a stock and all this kind of stuff, and it's still and not at least not impressive, like in terms of applying mathematical models. So that's where how I got into this. And one, I think, a turning point for me is that when I was at Stanford, I kind took a lot of like math statistical courses, and at one point, like I got invited to take one course. It's called statistical learning. And in the 90s, at that time, like it's still in early stage, and not many people are kind of interested in what we call statistical learning. And that's the however, when I dumped and kind of jumped into that course, I saw, oh, in terms of the principle, it's actually and not very complicated, right? It's like a test improvement. Test the preparation, right? Then you give people a test, then you take or you get this 70%, 30% wrong, then you study, and then do it again. And because you have a very clear goal. And also for statistical learning, it's the same. That's why I kind of got into, and then statistical learning took me to machine learning. Machine learning took me to AI. I think now, like, and surprisingly, for a person who starts from sociology, then now kind of becomes someone who called as an AI expert. So I think that was kind of one of my turning point and took me a different path.
So what I'm hearing is that you had this natural affinity for mathematics, and that drove your interest. The interesting thing is, though, even though you had this affinity for mathematics, you chose to get a PhD and sociology from Stanford University and a master of science degree in statistical computing. But the PhD in sociology is almost like a break from you know, your mathematics background. But if you combine your mathematics and statistical background and computing background with sociology, you see this intersection with learning. And then, of course, that's a natural segue into machine learning, right? So that, and I can see why now you got into, you know, machine learning and AI and spend a big part of your career with that. But the sociology aspect would give you EQ, right? It's sort of a feeling of humans and what their requirements are and how they interact and how they behave. Is that correct?
Yes, you're right. And actually, and sociology is very broad field. And in sociology field, and people can even study totally different things. Some people will study political sociology. Some people study sociology of economics. And also some people will study sociology of family. So you can actually go to many different directions. And for me, actually, I have been more focused on the methodology part, the kind of the mathematical model and also sociology model, how to use build a model to kind of summarize the social experience, then utilize that to do assessment and to kind of to do prediction and help people to make decision. So that is kind of my focus. So so overall, sociology and give me is more like an application field. And so after I graduated from Stanford, I actually did and a lot of even international and projects kind of help people to really kind of predict and help them to do some assessment.
You know, that's really, really fascinating. Some people I talk to who have a really interdisciplinary background, some of them have it in political science, for example, because political science really has many facets to it, and you can go into many professions. I really didn't think that sociology was that broad, but now when you talk about it, you're right. You know, you talk about the economic aspect or the political aspect, or there's a computational aspect, there's the family aspect, but it's really, really broad because you can apply it to almost any other discipline, right? The social aspects and the sociological aspects. And then because you focused on the mathematical underpinning and doing a statistical analysis, I can see why that would be so useful in what you're doing today. So that's kind of an eye-opener. I didn't think of sociology in that framework before. So which means it was a perfect launching ground for your career post being a sociologist. So where did you go to next after you completed your PhD in sociology and you had your master's in statistical computing, and then you took on projects which had a quantitative basis to it? What did you do next?
Yeah, and yes, this is also a good opportunity for me to kind of reflect. I think at the beginning, I was also kind of not sure, and I'm kind of interested in a lot of stuff. So I kind of spent quite a few years to kind of explore. And as you mentioned, after I graduated, I also did some teaching for a few universities, like University of Southern California and the University of California at Irvine, and also at the Riverside a little bit. And interesting is that for all my teaching, and I taught courses for political science department, international relations, business schools, but I only taught one course for a sociology department. So I think also like a one and lucky opportunity for me is that I got to like explore. So at that time, I kind of try to see how I can those kind of same mathematical quantitative method framework can be applied to a different field. And like on the other side is that besides teaching, I also did a lot of consulting. And at that time, I consulted for some project for United Nations, like you did. And in like 2003, I was even in Sri Lanka to kind of train people how to use quantitative methods to conduct project investment and also do prediction, so they can utilize more of the international aid to really improve what's going on there to have more positive impact. So I can, I think what I learned from there is that then really those kind of quantitative methods can be applied to many, many different fields and also can help people, which also can help me to, for my current work. I still like took a very, very cross-industrial approach, even when I was working for IBM. And however, like one turning point I will say for me, this was about like 2008. And when I was like doing a consulting for Ingram Micro, a very big corporation. And at that time, they kind of hired me and some other people for helping them to establish kind of transformation and plan for them to take them to be more data-driven and utilize more data. And at that time, it's, I think it was the first opportunity for me to interact with more like C-level people, executive CEOs and CTOs and CIOs. And at the last time, like some of my colleagues and me, myself, we had some difficulty to kind of communicate because they are speaking in business language. I'm more speaking in statistics and mathematics. So that is the chance for me to kind of really kind of transform me a little bit and talk to them in their language, but about mathematics, about quantitative methods, about statistical model. Then from there, I can really find some way and some like special methods and also learn some good opportunities as well.
So I can see now the foundation, which is very broad because sociology applies to so many different areas. And then you end up doing quantitative methods, which has a mathematical basis to PhD candidates, the University of Southern California, and the University of California, Irvine. And then you ended up consulting for United Nations. You mentioned Sri Lanka, but really it was a quantitative kind of work that you were doing, doing predictive analysis so that, you know, they can get funding and so on. And then with Ingram Micro, you then crossed over into the business side, but still working on the quantitative side and doing analysis and trend analysis and looking at data analytics, but also now working with senior executives. So understanding from a strategic standpoint, how data-driven analysis and decision-making can help a business more efficient and better. So that's really interesting. And then you ended up also doing data science and as a distinguished data scientist at IBM, where you served as chief data scientist for analytics services. So how did that come about? How did you end up at IBM?
Yes, and I think also like my like career development has also in some way reflect the development of data science, and like I mentioned, and in Ingram Micro, and at that time, like what I did actually as was classified as a kind of business analytics by our clients. At that time, I even did not know what the business analytics is, because we use different terms sometimes to refer the same thing. I think it's also like reflect like in the application field at that time, like business analytics was can become very hard. Then after that, I also like did some other consulting work. Then I work with Shopzilla. I think it's a kind of a search engine for products, and I think it's around 2009 or 2010, and at that time they gave me a title. They said, okay, we need to give you a title, and so you can talk to everybody. They gave me a title as a data scientist, And at that time, I never heard about what do you mean by data scientist? I said, I'm kind of quantitative method expert or statistician. Oh, and in the recently, like Ingrid Michael called me an expert for business analytics. Then at that time, they said, oh, we should use the title for data scientist. That's how, like, I think that's about time, like, people start to pay attention to data science, and the data science term become like emerge. So I was kind of get involved in a lot of opportunity, but also kind of driven by the development train. I said, okay, so I will pay more attention to data science. And after that, like, obviously when I joined IBM, and it's also about time, like, IBM start to pay more attention to data science. They said, oh, data science is something emerging, and IBM needs to pay attention. And we do not have many data scientists inside IBM, so we should go to hire some from someone outside. That's how I got in. Then so I become formally a data scientist after I got into IBM. Then data scientist become my title for many, many years.
Yeah, and then you end up being chief data scientist, right? So, and it's IBM, so that's a pretty good title. IBM, chief data scientist for their analytics service, and IBM is, of course, really, really famous. And before you joined IBM, of course, you worked as chief data scientist for companies like iSky and Retention Science. So you can see this evolution going from sociology, which is very broad, and there's always this sort of mathematical basis to it, to quantitative methods, to business analytics, now to data scientist. You're a data scientist. Yes. And you're an advisor to Harvard University Data Science Review, and that just kind of adds to it. Tell me more about RMDS Labs. I mean, what do you do there?
Oh, yes. And actually, the IBM work is kind of very good preparation for me. And it took me like to become a formally recognized data scientist and in the field. And so during that time, I also studied data science and a little bit more, because I'm always on the methodology side. And at that time, and one like a report and released by Gartner can really caught my attention. And according to their and the survey, and a lot of like data companies and organizations and established the data science project, but the successful ratio for data science project is at very low. It's like 20% or less. That means like 70% or 80% of the project actually failed or did not get into production. So I when I read that, I said, wow. Then why, right? Then we can, so I can do some study. And what I realized that there's a lot of problems, and one problem, and maybe it's about data not utilized enough, and our data preparation is not good enough. You know, like in our field, there's a term called garbage in, garbage out, right? If you and dump like in and the low quality data, you will get not good and the results. But also another and a problem I noticed that during that time is that a lot of project and they only rely on very narrow approach. So it's like I think it's as a people's happy, right? Like you have a hammer and everything is a nail, right? And you just and following through. But to solve business problems, every problem according to the question you raised, hypothesis and situation, usually you need to take a different method. And some people are not prepared for that. So I can come out with an idea called ecosystem or community-based view. So at IBM, like I become like advocating that message. And also like on the same time, I worked with people in Los Angeles. We built a data science community. I think, and I remember like at the first time, I always like actually in IBM, I always went to IBM's and FAC conference, the IBM Thinker. And I think in the first year, maybe 2016 or 17, when I start to speak about the ecosystem approach, and nobody listened. And to my session, maybe 10 people or 20 people come. But in 2018, when I spoke again, and my session, my room was full. And I think, I don't know how many, maybe over 100 or some people come to listen. People get attention. But however, IBM is huge, right? It's difficult to move. So I thought maybe I developed methods and I shall try it. So I left IBM and started IMDS. Basically, it's continue to build a data science community and also try this ecosystem approach to solve some problems. That's how I got into IMDS.
Ah, I see. So that makes sense. So throughout this whole journey from quantitative methods to, mathematical techniques to quantitative methods to business analytics to data science, you find that it's such a narrow approach. People are always taking narrow approaches, and you get this really high failure rate, as you mentioned, 80% failure rate.
Yeah.
And that's because you really have to apply the right tool based or the right methodology based on the problem. And if you just take a one hammer approach to everything, it's not going to work, right? You have to have surgical tools and do precision, personalized attention to the problem. And you figured that the best way to do that would be take an ecosystem approach, a community approach. And so you at this major conference hosted by IBM, and nobody believes it. And then the next time there you get your session is full. And but because you want to continue to build on this methodology of being community and a broader ecosystem, then you form this company so you can continue to develop these ideas and get a higher success rate, but also a wider proliferation of data science. So I can see this evolution, and it kind of reminds me of today. I just saw Hugging Face got an over $200 million, investment or something like that. But really they're taking an ecosystem approach to large foundation models, right?
Where yes.
They've got hundreds of thousands of different kinds of repositories and models. And guess what? It's now, they got this huge investment coming in. And again, I encourage the audience to take a look what the actual numbers are, but it just happened. It dropped today that, and that's because they're taking this more open source. Let's work as a community. Let's share. And if you do that, then you can then better have applied precision directed application of various techniques and methodologies to a particular problem. So that's why you formed RMDS. And I guess you're hoping that you're going to be a unicorn then and have have this sort of massive support that just happened with Hugging Face. And Hugging Face came out in 2016, and then they got this massive investment just now. So did I get that right? Did I make a mistake? Am I sort of what I think you're doing?
Yes, I think you're right. It's that Hugging Face is also a framework, and we have been utilizing as well. But for me, I think I'm not that kind of a business person. I'm more on the technology innovation side. So I called RMDS, also called RMDS Lab. And I'm kind of still collaborating with IBM and also other and companies. And I think through our and kind of work and plus others, people now start to adopt and ecosystem approach. And so the technology involved, and we also made some and good contribution. And however, in terms of business, maybe I'm not sure. I'm really a good CEO type of person, but we will continue definitely to advocate and this approach and push forward and this technology. And along and this and also another message we can contribute and get involved is called reinforcement learning and with a human loop, human feedback. So in that way, like besides those kind of machine AI, and we always need to like incorporate human and feedback, incorporate expert and opinion. And so for that development, because we have a large community, and our community now consists about like 40,000 people there, participants. So it's very large, sizable, and data science community. And with all these resources, we were still able to push forward this development for ecosystem approach, and also like a reinforcement learning with expert feedback, and hopefully will contribute to a lot of and business also and the startups. So like I'm not necessarily the a person who can take a startup to become a unicorn to raise hundreds of million dollars, but actually we have been supporting a lot of people and inside our community and to move out to start some startup. So we, in many ways, we are contributing to this development.
So let me focus a little bit more then on RMDS Lab and the data and AI ecosystem service provider, of which IBM is one of your collaborators and partners. I mean, how many people do you have directly as part of your lab? Do you have a small team, or is it like 20, 30 or 50? And then I'll ask about the ecosystem. I think you mentioned 40,000, but first of all, just this RMDS Labs, do you have a small team or a medium-sized team that works with you full-time, or how is that organized?
We are more like focused, rely on the ecosystem. So because the ecosystem is huge, right? Then we can, we have some like a stable and the project like to develop the ecosystem approach, and to support that, we do some training, and also for the reinforcement learning with human feedback, we also like develop that into kind of a research project in collaboration and with nearby universities like USC and Caltech. We collaborate a lot, so we are more organized in very formally and kind of loose network and organized by project. So sometimes we have a lot of people involved project, sometimes we have less. So it's more like a project base, but the stabilized one is more about like a training. And also we have now like established some like a long-term relationship with some corporation. They ask us to develop some technology. It's more centered about generative AI, like to help their marketing. And it's not like really like forefront, but it's something that is useful, right? That you can use a technology to quickly generate some text, generate some an image, and also even some and the program for it. So like we are doing and kind of a lot of stuff now. Yeah. One is to support ourselves, another is to move to contribute. Yeah.
Okay, so this is what I'm hearing then, and you're giving me even a deeper understanding. So you are the hub of an ecosystem, RMDS Labs, which your CEO and founder, you're the hub of this data science and AI ecosystem service, of which you have more than 40,000 participants. And what you'll do as a community is you'll take on research projects or training projects or other particular kinds of projects, and then that would have funding to provide the ability to work on that particular project. So you'll have universities coming to you, you have companies coming to you, and they'll say, hey, we've got a particular challenge and problem we want to solve. You've got this community of 40,000. Can you gather members of the community who are willing to work on this particular project? We'll fund it, and we're looking for particular outcomes that were meaningful to that university research project. Maybe it's a government-granted project. Maybe it's a corporation, and they want to work towards a particular means to help accelerate something they're doing in the data science AI space. So you serve that function, really as a community coming together, and in essence, like a crowdsourcing within this community of experts to focus on particular problems you want to solve. Is that what you do?
I think in some sense it is like what we are doing, and so in the quite many time we also kind of serve as kind of bridge, and so in the past we have helped the corporations like Disney, AWS, and served their needs, and also contribute to some project for NASA JPL. It's nearby, and like recently we even like. And helped to bridge between the city of Los Angeles and also some USC and graduate students. And last semester, I can work together with some professor at USC. We organized more than 55 graduate students, and we organized them into 14 and research groups. Then we did some and project 14 projects for the city of Los Angeles.
Ah, so that's really, really interesting, because then you've got a quite a large community that you can pull from when somebody has a particular project they're interested in. And then you will take on that project, and you can draw from the universities to do that, or you can draw from this community, 40,000 really, and that community is really unlimited in essence, right? Because you can draw from anybody in the world. And in fact, I'm probably guessing that you'd like people to join your community, because then it gives you the ability to even do more, right? Globally. So that's an interesting model. It's kind of like a Hugging Face in a way, of a community of people working on problems, sharing, and then where you can take on projects, though they also have this kind of startup mentality as well, right? So. Yeah. So if you took on a focused business partner, then that would be the unicorn side if you decided to go in that direction. But right now, you're really just focused on projects and using or leveraging your community to work on common interests on these projects. And that's a great model. I can see why you exist, and you're leveraging all of that background that you have in the past. You just mentioned now generative AI, and let's use maybe the more generic term, large foundation models, of which you have diffusion models, and or I should say you have fusion models, and then you have large language models, and generative AI can also be involved with synthetic data and GANs. And so, because of this drop that occurred last year, right, with OpenAI, and it just... everybody got really interested, whether they're interested because they're worried about it or they're interested because they're optimistic about it. Everybody is interested and everybody can use it. So on these large foundation models, of which you have generative models, they call them, of which large language models is an example, and you have Bing AI using GPT-4, or you have Google with their Palm 2 with Bard, or you had Anthropic with Cloud 2, which they released, and Gemini is now forecasted to come out soon, which is the next iteration. And OpenAI has their patents have been filed on GPT-5, so get some inkling of where that's going. Generative AI has this hallucination problem, right? And You see Jan LeCun saying, you know what, or my impression of LeCun of Meta is saying that it's not the end solution. You're going to have to do some kind of hybrid whatever to make this thing work better and to be trustworthy and maybe to achieve AGI, this artificial general intelligence. So we're going to mine all of that area, because you're an expert in this area and you're solving problems in this area. So first of all, are you more in the Jan LeCun camp? Now, I'm just giving you my opinion. I think he's saying it's more of a hybrid that you need, and not just pure these large language models, which we talk about. Or are you more in the other camp of Ilya Sutskever, where they think that, large language, or even I would say probably even DeepMind, they think that Well, no, I guess DeepMind is maybe more hybrid because they're trying to marry other things with large language models. Where do you sit? What do you think the future is? And are you able to keep up with all the papers that are dropping? I mean, like constantly, right?
You actually list a lot of really good questions. Let me try to answer them one by one. And first of all, about the RMDS and working model, and you did a very good summary. I want to thank you for this. And yes, you are right that we are still like working through training some events then to grow this community. And it's growing still. And naturally, and also a lot of people come to us for project, but and this moment is mostly for innovation project, because like then when you try to do some innovation, you need some fresh mind, right? So in our big community, it's easy to get, and also we can think differently. Then we can perhaps can come out with some prototype for them very quickly. So that has been going on. And now back to your question about generative AI or AI in general, I think I'm also quite influenced by IBM's approach, because I have been with them for many years, right? And IBM's approach, as I still, I think overall, in my understanding, is to take AI as a tool, as something to assist people. And so all for intents of solve problem, then it need to be in the hybrid. And so currently, and because of the open AI, the large language model, it has made a great impact and also built a very, very good foundation for sure. And so helped a lot and changed everything. And like now recently, right, and OpenAI also and open the channel for people to fine tune their GPT 3.5 Turbo, and perhaps soon and the GPT 4. So we are kind of like in terms of the project, then also we are becoming and to be a person and the organization building our solutions on top of OpenAI's ChatGPT. For example, for the a project I mentioned and the 14 project work for the cities, and one of them actually is utilize the ChatGPT to build some like a service chat, because like a lot of people, when they come to a city, or even they have been in a city, there's a lot of things they do not understand. They want to ask, they want to understand, but sometimes now it's very difficult, right? And then you ask a city, it will take a while to get back, or maybe not answer your question. So if you can build a chat, and the city chat, then well, easily. So that's one of the projects, and they're trying to work on that. And now, like we're also working for some other project, is that we start to fine tune the ChatGPT with what's available, so then we can build a good solution on top of ChatGPT to help to serve some specific need and for specific industry need. So we are going to direction is more like a focus on solving problems and with whatever technology and ready to be utilized by us.
So let me drill into this further. I mean, you could do the APIs that OpenAI has, right? And use it, so do the work based on what they're doing. And then they've added this customization capability, and then you can maybe narrow what they release to the public, but really direct it towards the more your specific needs.
Yeah,
there's this other route you can go too, you know, Llama and Llama 2, but there's all these derivatives or ones that are sort of kind of based on that community. You had Alpaca came out earlier this year, then Vicuna and Orca. There's so many of these open source ones where you can take the models and you have much more free wheeling capability to do more reinforcement, human feedback, and fine-tuning, right? Supervised and fine-tuning of these existing models, and not really depending on all of this fine tuning and human feedback that, you know, like OpenAI is doing and that. So which camp are you then? Are you thinking more open source or using the existing ones that are made available? I mean, for example, you could use Palm 2, right? And the APIs from Palm 2 from Google or Microsoft, of course, has their Azure platform, and they got all of those development tools that they put around GPT-4. So then you can access all of that and then leverage all of that to fine tune to the particular industry, or as you mentioned, the city that you're working on, or let's say it's a government, and a particular government agency wants to say, you know what, we want to use this, but we don't want to be, we don't want to get into this hallucination mess. We need something that's a lot more trustworthy and dependable and focused on a particular area that we're interested in. So I'd like to just get a better idea how you do that.
Yes, and actually for our client, and we are more taking the load you mentioned, the fine tune, right? Because they want to get something very quick. So in that way, like it's more faster. And also like utilize this approach, then you can get a good support from OpenAI as well when there's some problem and the AUKUS. So that's the one. But also for some of our own innovation or research project, we are more taking another approach to utilize all the open source, because for utilizing lane, and we have better control, right? And so we can build everything around the direction we want to go. And so in that way, for example, now we are working with some universities and the research groups. What they want is some open and it's kind of AGI powered process can speed up their knowledge discovery and also can improve their research quality. So we are doing some own innovation and around this direction, and which is basically completely built on open source, because we do not want this to be controlled by any commercial organizations. Yeah.
Okay. So and to the audience, all of my interviews are unscripted. So I'm just kind of brainstorming with Alex as I find out more about what you do. I need to ask the host, the Generative AI Summit. It's virtual on October 17th, and I realize you'd be perfect for it. There's another party that actually owns the summit, so I'd have to get approval from them. But are you free on October 17th from 8 a.m. or sometime between 8 a.m. and 12 p.m. Pacific time? On the 17th of October, you would
I probably need to check with my the calendar to confirm. I think I think she'll be okay. Yeah, I can move things along if it's something interesting for us. Yeah.
Okay, so what I'll do is I'll do a direct introduction to save time so that you can explore with the owner. And then I'm the MC. I'm the host. They call me the host, but I don't own it. I'm just the moderator for the entire conference. So I do the introductions. I'll do the Q&A. But we're really looking for somebody who has the coding kind of, who can create the models, tune the models, that experience, which you clearly have, right? So we already got ones that can talk about the sort of the general aspects of it. But because you have some, you know, direct experience in creating these things and working with them, then that'd be perfect. So I'll do that right after this call. So this is kind of me brainstorming and actively with you. So it sounds like then you're in the camp of, you know, let's use some of these existing models that are already pretty much trained, and then you're going to tune it. And you're tuning it through system messaging and things like that, or how are you tuning it?
We're tuning them for a different application. One application is mainly to generate images, and for some advertising and projects, like they want to, for example, put a car in a certain and a situation, or put another product in and a certain environment, then turn the phone there, they can create advertisement piece very quickly. And also, and another will be more structured and message creating, creating some summary about the financial situation, summary about some research, and so those kind of application. Yeah.
So to actually do that, though, are you adding additional training to it, which is supervised in some way? You're adding another layer of reinforcement human feedback. Are you playing then with the system messaging concept, the customization and pre-prompting, so that when people do their own prompt overlay, there's all of this undercurrent of prompting that already occurs automatically, et cetera, et cetera. So how are you doing that fine tuning?
Yeah, we all for the others, I probably and cannot talk too much. Sorry, because we are working for some of our clients.
Right.
And but the overall idea is to utilize layers and the special data. Then we can input, then fine tuning, and also add some our own and preference and some specific restrictions. And it's more supervised and the training to kind of tune the application more toward their needs.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't looking for specific examples, but sort of your general methodology. And I think the audience would be interested too, right? And let's say there's a corporation out there and they're thinking, gee, I'd like to use this, but it doesn't fit. So what do I have to do with what's there to make it fit? So, and you would know how to do that. So
yes, yeah, like you mentioned, it's also like a way to customize the application, right? Customization is very important to the corporation or the organization. So through this now, and the good news is that the OpenAI and have made this available, so you can utilize this, and it's not very expensive also now, and so you can do it for your client. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just fascinating. We can, you know, basically do a whole piece just on your work in this area. Okay, so I got an idea what you're doing. I can definitely see you're building a community. And every time you build a community, it has this kind of open source inclusion diversity aspect to it, which means you're embracing it in a broader way. And that's really attractive to a lot of people, because you've got the corporate centric side, but there's this community side, which is as important, and some people actually prefer it. So it's good that you're working on that side. And you've also recently joined Million Peacemakers. So tell me what is Million Peacemakers? Why did you join Million Peacemakers? What do you hope to achieve by joining Million Peacemakers? And how do you hope to help Million Peacemakers?
That's also another great question. I have been advocating, and another idea is data science for positive and social impact. And along that, we actually worked on many projects, and locally, also globally, to help cities, and also to help some other and nonprofit organizations. And also, as we mentioned, and for my and past and career, and also I worked in Sri Lanka, and the Latin is kind of sponsored by the United Nations. It's only mainly for peacemaking, and Latin is the war was still going on, right? And also beyond that, I also was able to be sponsored by USAID for some other international project, actually in Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Kenya, Africa. So I have been involved in those kind and the peacemaking and international project. I understand is that a million peacemakers also is involved in some like Rwanda and also some international project, which kind of got me interested in this. And also I was kind of fascinated by the prime and work and the million piece waymaker already done has and produced is kind of utilizing and chatbox, right, to kind of enhance those kind of peacemaking. So all this kind of fit into my and experience and my idea. So and I actually was thinking about this for a while. So for social good, why should we like and do something like maybe utilize the current and large language model to help some kind of international peacemaking and also help the youth. And which is why like this opportunity come at the right time and happily accept the opportunity to join and luckily we'll work together with people like you and hopefully we will make something great together.
Yeah, I guess this idea is really around tech for good, right? So yes, optimizing tech for good, and AI is so hot today, and AI definitely marries with the sustainable development goals, of which peace is one of the key sustainable development goals, or SDGs from the UN.
Yeah.
And because you have a deep tech background, you have a tech for good background, you worked it with nonprofits forever, and Million Peacemakers is a nonprofit. So it's a confluence of all of these special capabilities and skills coming together. And you definitely are, again, a hub for scaling peace through using technology globally. And there's some major goals within the Million Peacemakers community. So really interesting to see your perspective on that. We're down to the last few minutes. And what I'd like to do now is let's talk just a few minutes about the future. Do you think artificial general intelligence is around the corner? Do you think it's 10 years out? It will never happen? Or do you think it could happen tomorrow? Do you think maybe we even have some of it now? What's your feeling about artificial general intelligence? And I'm talking machine intelligence. I'm not saying it has to be human. I'm just saying machines that are, you know, like there's this massive multitasking language understanding is quite the MMLU. And these large language models or foundation models, they score close to an expert level. And if you add in self-reflection and some of these other, you know, tree of thought, some of these other ways of working with these models, you actually get something that is like expert level, and that's like now. So that's what's considered sort of a measure of equivalency, and not the same, something different, but can do a lot of the equivalent of what we can do. So where do you see that? Do you see AGI? Do you see then exceeding us? Not human, not being human, just exceeding us in another kind of way of doing it. And maybe this ties in with your IBM work, because IBM does neuromorphic computing. They're into chips. They're into hybrid models. They definitely are in symbolic AI together with all the other kind of major paradigms in AI together with, you know, large foundation models. So where do you sit?
I think like I agree that I think AGI and AI in general is here already, and the large language model like ChatGPT, all this, they can do so much, and in somehow they can replace and the people's work. And also I agree the point that AI probably will not replace people, but the people and utilizing AI will perhaps replace those people who are not using AI. And that's maybe the train and in the future. And also, like your concept you mentioned, and Kent, what we are talking about is AI, artificial intelligence. It's not a human intelligence. And so I think overall, and the AI will develop very fast and probably will reach a point and the human will have difficulty to adopt or even utilize them. And that's something we need to and work together. But however, and another kind of concept is also need to get our attention is human intelligence, right? And different. And also can agree to some people's view that in the past 100 years or so, like and our technology science developed so fast and everything. And but however, and all this is toward a direction like to train people, educate people, and make people more like a machine. And so, and then we need to maybe change a little bit to figure out what it is and what really and human intelligence is about. Maybe there's a difference. Then we can figure out the difference and we should advance both human intelligence and also artificial intelligence then to make the world better. So that's why like what we are working on, tech for good, is going to be very important for us.
Yeah, tech for good and thinking that there's other kinds of ways of solving problems, right?
Yes. So,
and it doesn't have to be the human way of solving problems. It could be some other way. And realizing there's these parallel streams.
Yes.
Yeah,
I totally agree with you. There are many ways to solve problems. And now I think one problem we have is like we push everybody to only focus on the artificial way. Some people we call the rational way or whatever, modern way, but there are many other ways that we do need to pay attention and to learn, to open our mind to.
So Alex, you're a data scientist. You definitely are involved with machine learning and AI, and you got this great background. It's very interdisciplinary. So do you use large language models every day, like a ChatGPT or GPT-4 or Bard or one of the other things? Do you use it every day in your, just whether it's for personal getting information or to help put ideas together? Is it a tool now you use every day?
I will say I do not use every day, maybe every week. So I do use it often. And that in some ways can help my work. And also another is more for me to explore, right? To see how. And we can compare the human versus machine. Like, for example, like OpenAI recently and released the code interpret, which was very interpret, very impressive, right? You can upload the data, then they can analyze data, do some basic modeling, basic statistics. So I would like explore that. Sometimes we can utilize part for our work and also analyze, it's good, maybe not good enough yet. to kind of understand, yeah.
I mean, as of today, maybe they've changed, so that's it's August. They cut off the access to the internet, though. Though you could use a plugin to do an access to the internet, because there's plugins that will allow you the access to the internet. And then if you combine that with Code Interpreter, then that's perfect, right? Because Code Interpreter can do a lot.
Yes.
The only thing, when I used Bing AI the other day, it wouldn't give me some in-depth answers, which it used to before. So, you know, as these things are out in the wild, people using it, sometimes they put all these guardrails on. And then to me, anyway, sometimes it's not as useful. That's the only thing. But
yeah, I think this also kind of confirm another view of us is that AI and really will work very well as a system. But you cannot completely rely on AI 100%. Not maybe not yet. For not for all the tasks at least.
Yeah, for the moment, but you never know. Gemini's coming out, GPT-5's coming out, right?
Oh, yes.
It'll be interesting to see what these things
Yeah,
are
it
doing.
will advance. Yeah, sure.
So, Alex, this is the last question. And what's your recommendations to the audience?
I think keep learning and keep experience and all these new technologies is also something good, but also keep in mind it's about the tech for good approach.
Tech for good for growth. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, Alex, thank you for coming in today. Again, you got this marvelous background dating over decades in very broad areas and deep as well. So, you bring a lot to the world. And the fact that you're building the AI and data science ecosystem as a service is a marvelous contribution to the world, right? Because you can crowdsource talent and then work on projects using that crowdsourcing community that you built. So, and it's growing. So thank you again for coming in and sharing so much with our audience.
Thank you. Nice talking with you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.